Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Thank you so much, Dave Solomon. Mercy. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Looking out the window, this is a kitchen home studio, by the way. This is a really big kitchen, and I get to see what's happening outside, these cool curtains. And if Rufus and Chaka Khan, my cats, aren't here to keep me company, they're upstairs, and I know they're cool. So I get to look out and sometimes open the screen door. Beautiful fall day. Happy autumn to you, my friend. Wherever you are, I hope it's splendiferous. It's going to be that kind of show, baby. Yes. Oh, my goodness. And before we do anything else besides thanking Dave Solomon for the glorious intro as usual, let us say happy birthday to a very special lady. Her name is Rebecca Hofberger. She is the founder of the American Visionary Museum, and they are really celebrating today because she's one of the most caring individuals you'd possibly want to see and meet. And then to see what she's done with this museum in Baltimore, unbelievable. So, happy birthday, Rebecca. We'll see you soon. Woo! You know who's going to be on the show today, don't you? Yes, you do. Joe Sample. In a couple of hours, the third and final hour of the show. Can't wait. And we are going to start off with something by Joe from the 1970s. Carmel on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Welcome.
Some time to Guggenheim.
Was nice, huh? Oh my gracious, just love to hear Michael Franks. He puts you in a different frame of mind, doesn't he? Oh gracious, you know, it was Michael's birthday the other day, and he turned 68, and I was thinking of an interview that he had here on Hybrid Jazz. This is going back now. Well, actually last year, because it was right before his event at Ramshead on 11-11-11. And it was a full day because we had Carla Chisholm on that day and Slim Men, and then Michael ended the show. Woo, it was crazy. But one of the things that I remember that he talked about, and something that's pivotal to his entire career, was going back to high school. He heard a poet who had off rhymes, very quirky guy, named Theodore Rothke. And Theodore just cast a spell on Michael so much, and then Michael got turned on to the music of the Gilbertos and Antonio Carlos Jobim, and he paired all of that, and he came up with his own sound. And I just marvel at this kind of information about the folks that we have admired through the years and the reason why they became who they became. And you'll hear Joe Sample talk about this. One of the big inspirations he had, and maybe still does, he's a big fan of studying very much into African-American musical history. And his dad used to always tell him about this pivotal character in war times, and hopefully we can persuade Joe to talk about his inspiration. But as far as Michael is concerned, he got his legs, as it were. His parents loved swing. He was hearing Nat King Cole and the Gershwins and Irving Berlin in his home. His parents weren't musical, but Michael just gravitated to the guitar and other stringed instruments. And this is killer. You might not know this. Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee used to play Philadelphia at this club called the Main Point all the time. Well, on their album called Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, there's Michael Franks doing this song, White Boy Lost in the Blues. And he's playing guitar, mandolin, and banjo on that. So if you want to pick that up and get to know early Michael Franks, you'll get a big hoot out of that. Michael's coming back to Ram's Head. That will be in November. And one other thing I wanted to tell you that's real pivotal. Time Together is the name of the CD. You just heard Summer in New York. And the track on that album, Time Together, all the proceeds go to what is Michael Franks' heart, and it's called Hearts United for Animals, which is a no-kill shelter, and they always like to hear from you. Michael has donated a large portion of his proceeds to that particular endeavor, HUA.org. Michael and his wife love animals so much, and any time that I can mention that, he always appreciates that. Hearts United for Animals. Keep that in mind. And Michael, if you're listening, have a good time in Austin on Friday. Woohoo! We heard Lee Ritenour and July from the just-dropped CD, Rhythm Sessions. That's today, the 25th of September. Isn't that a cool song, July? Woohoo! Love it. You hopefully heard Lee Ritenour with Joy and me on Cool Jazz Conversations several days ago. It's just so nice to know that he's still doing his thing. He was in D.C. over the weekend, part of that big Monk Institute gala that they had on Sunday night. A lot of great things happened there. And Rhythm Sessions is on Concord Records. And itinerary includes Hermosa Beach on the 30th. It's a K-Jazz event, my Cali friends. And also, GRP is having its 30th anniversary at the Blue Note in New York with Dave Grusin, John Patitucci, Diane Shore, and Lee, all doing their thing. And that's coming up on October 9th, it looks like. And they're going to play a few dates there. So if you're in New York, or maybe you want to go to New York, autumn in New York sounds pretty cool to me, huh? And we heard Carmel, Joe Sample, from 1979, Abe Laboriel on bass, Dean Parks on guitar, Styx Hooper on drums, Paulino Da Costa on percussion, Hubert Laws on a track or two, and Joe Sample is our guest in another, close to an hour and a half or so, and we wanted to dip into Joe Sample music so that you could feel some periods of time where he was focused on one thing or another. There's so much that we need to credit him for, one of those pioneers, certainly a legend. And I was all set to play a different track right now, but I wanted to go back to 1961, if that's okay with you. He talked about this when he was on Cool Jazz Conversations 2 years ago, and really takes some pride in this particular song. This is going back to Jazz Crusaders now. This is the early days. When did they move to L.A.? I have my notes here. They moved to L.A. After college, and I have to get the year. I put, 1960. So 1961 was when they did this particular album, and it was the first. Can you imagine now how many decades later? Freedom Sound is the name of this, and it's from Joe Sample, our guest on Hybrid Jazz, from Trish Hennessy. is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Was low.
song just hits you right between the eyes, doesn't it? Oh, and it just didn't happen once. It just seems like when you hear it, it has a fresh significance to it. Who would have thought to have paired Layla Hathaway and Joe Sample together back in 1999? I'm thinking that maybe somehow, some way, Kirk Whalum had something to do with that, who's playing saxophone on When Your Life Was Low from the song Lives On. Oh, what a CD that is. Lenny Castro on that thing, too. And it just had a certain kind of magic. You had that ultimate soul that Layla brings to everything. Even when folks are trying to put her in a pop category, she still has that vulnerability and that digging deep. And then Joe, with that jazz sensibility that he brings to everything, that elegance that he has, and you got a little bit of upscale, and you have the earthy, just is packing a punch. And, you know, the song in and of itself means a whole lot, but when WSMJ was kicking in Baltimore, my program director, we were going through this spiritual journey together, and she used to have these interesting perspectives on songs and life and people, and she said, can you just hear God saying that to somebody, When Your Life Was Low? You used to love me so. And I went, oh, that's just going to change the whole way I hear the song. And either way you look at it, whether it's somebody who is in a love relationship and it's obviously not something that is reciprocated, and the disappointment and the feeling of abandonment, and then to put a spiritual context to it, just amazing. Woo! Joe Sample, Layla Hathaway. And Joe will be here at the top of the last hour of the show where you are. It will be the third and final hour of the show where we are. It's 3 p.m. Eastern time. So just so you know, hopefully that was made clear enough on Facebook, because this has been posted over and over. And Stephanie, our little contact, a little while ago said, no worries, Trish. Joe's wife said he'll be calling in at 3, so yay. I want to tell you about a gentleman we heard before Joe and Layla. His name is Michael Pettison. What an interesting fellow he is, an amazing tenor sax master. He has a new album out called Live at the Loft in Summers Point, New Jersey, which was right down the road, certainly from Harvey Mason, our guest that we had on Thursday. Wasn't he a hoot? Oh, I love him so much. And then down the road, or over the bridge, shall we say, to Ocean City, New Jersey, where the family spent summers. So I never knew Michael Pettison, if he ever had time in Summers Point, but this is quite a piece of work, because Michael is so adept at feeling, especially John Coltrane. You heard him do impressions on that, and you'll hear John Coltrane himself a little bit later in the show. Michael toured with Maynard Ferguson, Dave Brubeck, Stevie Wonder, the OJs, Stanley Clark. He is fully capable of standing on his own, but this is how ultra cool this artist is. He has a PhD in psychology, and what he specializes in is making sure that musicians get attention in the way of balance in their life. That's awesome. So I wanted to make sure you heard his take on impressions, and you would know his name, Michael Pettison, P-E-D-I-C-I-N. You'll be hearing more. Hopefully he'll be on the show. And we heard from the start, from 1961, Freedom Sound. And we'll ask Joe Sample about the Young Rabbits phase, and how he feels, actually, about that title. The different categorization he had through the years, and what the record companies were trying to do as far as putting him in a box, got to be interesting stuff. You know Joe's going to tell the truth. And I just can't help it. I told you before I wasn't going to play Freedom Sound, but felt led to, and we're going to dip back again, because this show is basically about the life and times of Joe Sample. So I wanted to go to 1997 or thereabouts from Sample This, when George Duke got a hold of Joe, and they did some retooling, refining, or just working over, just cause. Sample This was the name of the project, and this is Fly with Wings of Love on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you. Yeah, the day was long, lots going on, but now it's me and you. Let's put on a song.
The insert from the new 4Play hard disk, and I'm fanning myself. Nathan East doing his thing from 4Play's brand new Esprit de Four CD, and that's all I want to do. Sounds so good, doesn't he? Have Mercy, arranged by Bob James, and man, nice guitar work from Chuck Loeb. Harvey Mason doing his thing on drums. Oh, these guys are so magical together. If you heard Harvey Mason just go on about the absolute love in their brotherhood and knowing without a shadow of a doubt that this is family. And when Chuck came into the picture after so many years with Larry Carlton, you know, you always wonder, is this going to work? You were just used to gelling and you had so much success. And Chuck Loeb fits like a glove. I'm telling you, it's just choice. When you spend the first weekend of fall listening to this CD, honestly, I was telling Muse, who was with us the other day when Harvey was a guest, it's like listening to the best way to find yourself in a holiday season, in a holiday mode. There's this hope and there is this feeling of nesting. There is this strong spiritual sense of things coming together. All of that right here in Esprit de Four. Can't say enough about it. Go out and buy it, honestly. We heard Alvin Fisher, who I had the pleasure of meeting. He was one of the winners on Friday of the tickets. I actually had tickets to give away to this beautiful venue in D.C. called the Hamilton. And Alvin and his lovely wife, Cheryl, got to go. And we had a ball. I went with Drew Davidson and his mom. That was an adventure because Sister Child got lost here on the way. And actually, truth be told, to Anita's house, Drew's mom. But we all congregated. It was an absolute wonderful venue, and Larry Carlton was off the chain. Well, as it turns out, so is Alvin. Alvin, you heard play flute on La La Means I Love You, one of those great songs that nobody can get enough of. When you hear it on flute, oh, isn't that something? From the forthcoming CD called, you ready? Absolutely. Just love it. Alvin, you're a trip. And he had a Casey Corbett Knight on background vocals. He had Mike Corbett on drums. And actually, Alvin Jr. on guitar and William Resnick on keyboards. So you'll be hearing more from Alvin. Yes, you will. And you'll be hearing more from Joe Sample. He'll be here in less than an hour. You heard from Sample This, all 14 songs. Man, they're such a trip to hear that George Duke production. And as Jerry B said, Jerry B's in the chat room today, yay! It's so cool when you hear George sneak in at the end of Fly With Wings of Love. On that track, it's just, I love the idea of Sample and Duke getting together and trading riffs. Also on the CD, Lenny Castro, anytime he's on a CD, it's worth gold, honest to gosh. And Diane Reeves is on this, on Sample This, and of course that would make sense because she's George Duke's cousin. Hubert Laws is on here. Steve Gadd, who plays very strongly into the new CD from Joe Sample, and Randy Crawford, Steve Gadd, and Nicholas Sample, Joe's son, on bass on this new live project. But I digress. Also on this Sample This is Lori Perry and Lynn Davis on the background vocals. And when I got a chance to spend some time with George Duke after the Clark Duke event at Wolf Trap, he was really missing Lynn Davis. So apparently she has pulled herself out, and I'm not sure about the circumstances, but he was talking about persuading her to come back into the scene. So we'll see how that goes. And late 2012, which is really where we are right now, isn't it? Into 2013. You never know what's going to be happening by this time next year as far as musical projects are concerned. And one thing that we know for sure, the legends will remain so. And there is no one who is more of a legend than John Coltrane. And it was his birthday the other day, 9/23/1926 was when he was born. Of course, he died far too early in 1967. And wanted to play this song just because we're talking about legends, and Joe Sample certainly is one. But this goes back to a time when John was in Philadelphia. He was born in High Point, North Carolina, and through some circumstances found himself in Philadelphia at the age of 17, and he met Juanita Naima Grubbs, and he wrote this song called Naima. And just a pleasure to be able to give it to you on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Thank you.
This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Herself so much to sincerity. When you're singing a song about your mama, oh my gosh, and what your mama used to tell you, because I am special. Tracy Hamlin there from her Season CD from a few years back. Better Days came after, but I just felt real led to play this song for you today because this is what it says on the liner notes featuring my precious former students from the Genesee School. And who wrote the song besides Tracy is Kevin Askins, Anthony Patrick, and Jonathan Lassane, who does so much at Mount Pleasant Church here in the Baltimore area. He's wonderful, and he's full of these musical projects and spiritual awarenesses, and he and Tracy go back a long time. Also on that, and I know Jerry B. will get a kick out of this because he'll recognize these names, Eric Valentine on drum programming and Moog bass, Alan Johnson on keyboard, Stanley Cooper on guitar. Woo-hoo! And those students just having a grand old time on that song. And there's a picture of Tracy's mom on the back of the foldout on the CD, and it says, "I miss you, Mommy." Just beautiful. Dorothy Marie Hamlin. Beautiful, just like her daughter. Mm-mm-mm. Now, Tracy, I'm just going to tell you this. She is making it happen in the Baltimore area. I'm just so tickled. Gloria Gaynor has thought the world of Tracy, and Tracy has been singing backup for Gloria Gaynor and has done some legwork on the road for Gloria. But now, Tracy, besides getting together some St. Lucia projects for the past few years and doing them very well, Tracy is not only going to do a gig that's just this shy of being sold out this Sunday at a place called Magoobies in Timonium, Maryland, but Tracy is now booking acts for that particular venue. She is so cool. And then we get the word that she's going to be with some highbrow players at the Metropolitan Room in New York City next Friday, October the 5th. Excuse me. So if anybody is in the area or wants to come to the area, I'll be hosting that event for Tracy Hamlin this coming Sunday. And if you need information, there's TracyHamlin.com, but more importantly, her Facebook page, because that's sort of taken the place of a lot of folks who had a website. Not that it should necessarily, but a lot of folks are just trending toward that because Facebook is such an immediate gratification. Not really in favor of that, mind you, but that's symptomatic of the U.S. at this particular time. Larry Carlton, we heard Smiles and Smiles to Go from Alone But Never Alone from 1986. Yes! Just marveling at the artistry shown on the stage at the Hamilton in D.C. Man, what a venue. The crown jewel of Washington, D.C., right across the street from the Willard Hotel, which is the Hotel of Presidents. Such a history. Beautiful. Oh, can't say enough. So Drew Davidson and Anita and Alvin Fisher and Cheryl and Anita King was there, yes, and some folks in the industry just to gather around and show support for Larry. We were marveling at the fact that Larry, in 1988, 2 years after this beautiful song that he feels should have won a Grammy, and he said so on the stage that night, Larry had one of those situations happen to him that you never want to have happen, even to somebody that you don't like at all. You never want to wish this on anybody. One of those victims of random violence in L.A., right outside room 335, his private studio in L.A., he was shot, and the bullet ripped his vocal cords, shattered him, and he was so blessed to have not lost his life. And he said to me after the show on Friday, he took my hand and he said, "Isn't it amazing that we have had these blessings for so long? Isn't it fabulous to wake up each day and to be grateful?" Oh, my God. He just killed me. He was so wonderful to have said that. He knows it was just an amazing exchange, and he is an amazing person. John Coltrane, Naima, couple of things you might not know, and it's significant to know this. You got to know about a person's past in order to appreciate who they have turned into that you revere. John Coltrane, born High Point, North Carolina, and that was 1926. In December of 1938, in a space of a very short time, he lost his dad, his grandparents, and his aunt. He found himself with his mom and a cousin, and they moved to Philadelphia when he was 17. And he went into the military, and he came back and was under the tutelage of a gentleman named Dennis Sandol, who was a jazz guitarist, a composer, and a music educator. And Dennis and John cultivated this relationship to the point where, in 1955, John got a call from Miles Davis, and the rest is history. But it's just interesting to know that Dennis was instrumental in making sure that John sort of knew the ropes about what to expect. He saw something so monumental in Coltrane, and it's just really gratifying to know that that particular scenario happened in Philly, as did the writing of the song, Naima, because Juanita Naima Grubbs was a Philly girl, and Giant Steps was a monumental CD. Joe Sample has had a few of them, and he's coming up now in less than 30 minutes, but I wanted to play something brand new by a female artist right now. Her CD, just like Lee Ritenour's, drops today. Huge Grooves drops today, too, by the way. But Tia Fuller is a saxophone player of a lot of worth. Matter of fact, Terry Lynn Carrington said, and she's on this CD, by the way, all over Angelic Warrior. Terry Lynn Carrington said that Terry Lynn's dad said that Tia plays like a guy. And I guess in some circles that would be considered immense flattery. Whatever the circumstances, Tia Fuller is got some chops. This is Descend to Barbados, a song about her friend Mimi Jones, who has been on the show. Tia Fuller is going to be on Cool Jazz Conversations in the next couple of weeks or so. This is brand new on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy, from her new Angelic Warrior, Tia Fuller.
Thank you. Thank you. dream, not always what you seem. And though my heart may break when I awake, let it be so. I only know Ruby is you. They say, Ruby, you're like a song. You just don't know right from wrong. And in your eyes I see heartaches for me. Right from the start, who stole my heart? Ruby, it's you. I hear your voice, and I must come to you. I have no choice, so what else can I do? They say, Ruby, you're like a flame. Into my life you came. And though I should be well, still I just don't care. You thrill me so, I only know. Ruby, it's you. A flame, into my life you came, and though I should be well, still I don't care, you thrill me so, I only know.
One of the all-time great songs from Ray Charles. Oh my gosh. You know when you hear a song for the first time and you know that that song will always mean something to you? I don't know how old I was. I was a little girl when I heard Ruby the first time, and that song just has stayed in my memory. One of those haunting love songs. And through the years, maybe you feel this way, but whenever there is a song with a woman's name, a female name in the title, whether it's a little girl or a teenage girl or a full-grown woman, there's always something special. There's an extra measure of love or longing in that song, and that's it right there. Ray Charles Robinson, born on September 23rd, 1930. Same day, different year, 4 years apart from John Coltrane. And passed away June 10th, 2004. You know, his last name was indeed Robinson, and he wanted to call himself Ray Charles so as not to be confused with the champion boxer, Sugar Ray Robinson, just so you know. Yeah. Ray Charles, and that's on a few different compilations, actually, dedicated to you, 1961, A Man and His Soul, 1967. This is from Hit the Road, Jack, and Don't You Come Back No More. Oh, gosh. It's just so mesmerizing to know that Ray Charles was able, very rare in any year since music began, since it was listed in Billboard or wherever the listing started, but in pop music, in R&B, in jazz, in country music, just across the board, except for opera. But he could have worked on that had he lived a little longer. So just one of those people that when you realize that they are not here walking the earth anymore, sometimes it's just a little overwhelming because you feel their presence palpably, and you always will. Joe Sample, woo! We heard something from Soul Shadows from 2004, and quite a departure for Joe at that time. He wanted to pay homage to the 20th century composers that inspired him. Joe had felt that if you could do stride or boogie-woogie or ragtime, you could just be your own one-man band, and that's what he did on Soul Shadows. He did Fats Waller's Ain't Misbehavin', and one of the composers, the people that was larger than life in the early 1900s was a gentleman that he also paid tribute to on this CD. And I want to ask him specifically about James Reese Europe. Quite a magnetic fellow, quite a pioneer in his way, and adamantly so because he was so outspoken. We'll get to a little bit more of that, but just wanted to play something else by Joe Sample, and we're going to play something else momentarily. But first, I wanted you to hear this song to get you into the frame of mind of who we're going to be talking to. This is Melinda Ford. We heard Tia Fuller, and that was from her Angelic Warrior CD, brand new. And John Patitucci, by the way, is on that CD with her. Terry Lynn Carrington is as well, and you'll be hearing more as the days progress. But wanted to get to Melinda Ford, who's in our region. She's another saxophonist, and this is one of those songs that is going to pave the way for Joe Sample. This is I Told Jesus from My Commitment to You. That's the name of the CD on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Oh, it feels so good in here.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, a new day, a new life for me, and I'm feeling good. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom in the breeze, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, a new day, a new life for me, and I'm feeling mighty good, yeah. Oh well, yeah. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies are having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a bold world and a cold world for me. And I'm feeling mighty good, y'all. Oh, yeah. Stars, when you shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. Freedom is mine, that's how I feel. And this older world is a colder world, and a colder world for me. But I'm feeling mighty good. I'm feeling good this evening.
That's lovely. Let's put it right there in the pocket, huh? Yeah. And Nicholas Sample on bass once again. My baby. And my Joe.
I love you so much.
Let us just savor that, shall we? Oh, to hear Randy Crawford and her vocals after all this time, and how long have she and Joe Sample been doing their thing together? You can just tell in any of the pictures that you've ever seen of Joe Sample and Randy Crawford, the love that is between them. Honest to gosh, he looks at her as if she is absolute gold, and she looks back at him as if to say thank you. Just amazing. And when you hear this live project with Joe Sample and Randy and Steve Gadd and Nicholas Sample, you're just hearing some magic, you know, from a series of live gatherings they had, and just knowing the history behind their partnership, the musicality that they have thrilled us with through the years. It's just something. It's almost, honest to gosh, like a religious experience. And with that, let me tell you something. It's just a pleasure to be able to do this once again. I had an opportunity with my good friend Joy Hall on Cool Jazz Conversations to do this once before, but now it's an opportunity to catch up. And what can you say about a gentleman who many of us consider to be the king of keyboard, or the gourmet cook of composing, or the ultimate mentor, and certainly a legend? Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Sample. There he is. Bless your heart, sir.
Hello?
Hi, Joe. It's me. It's Trish Hennessy. How are you?
You knew I was on the phone.
I did. I did know you were on the phone. I saw your phone number pop up, and I thought, okay, he probably has been waiting for just about a minute or so, so it was perfect timing. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm doing fine. I'm down here in this Southeast Texas heat. I'm sweating.
Are you?
Yeah,
wow.
for the winter to come back in season now.
Well, you know what? I wish I could drive the car to bring the family up here, because we're enjoying fall. We love it.
Yeah, I know, but it'll be over soon.
Yeah, it will. And how are you feeling? You just got back from Japan, right?
Yes, and then I went. Where did I go? To Utica, New York. But the other night, I did a solo piano gig there.
Oh, wow!
It was a lot of fun. This weekend, I'm going with the trio to Connecticut, to Annapolis, and Alexandria, Virginia.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. And I'm really glad to hear you mention that, because certainly that was the reason why we wanted to get you on today. Because whenever you come to either Alexandria, Virginia, or to Ram's Head, I can't speak for what's happening elsewhere, but you get a lot of love, Mr. Sample, do you not?
Well, that's really, I always love coming there. They have always been wonderful fans there in that region, and I've always loved coming there for years and years now.
I know it, and this will be really special if you have the trio, because when you come to an intimate setting like at Ram's Head, when you're up close and personal and people can really feel you, they're feeling like over four decades worth of music. When you look back, do you get astounded at the breadth of music that you've been able to create through the years?
At one point, I recognized that I had been blessed. I got a blessing from the Lord or a supreme being, whatever you want to think, that I was blessed with all the ingredients of African American music.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's coming out of me, you know, it's coming out because it was meant to come out, and it has been a natural source. And I used to read, you know, critical reviews that people would tell me this, or other musicians would tell me something, as if there is some purity in music, that if the music isn't pure, it isn't really, you know, art.
Yeah.
I don't give a damn about no art. I know it's supposed to come out of me. And that's why I was born, and I'm doing exactly. I am portraying the gifts that I got from the Lord, and that's what I'm doing. And it is a wonderful experience, and I know it takes me into places that other musicians couldn't go. So it is truly a blessing.
It really has been to hear you through the years, Joe, and honestly, you know, when you delve into the background and the inspiration of, you know, someone like you, who most of us consider to be a legend, and you find out what was the impetus for you to get that light bulb going off in your head saying, I got to do this. I'm supposed to do this. I mean, going back to playing for your mama after church at the T's when you were 6 years old, and I have that imagery, and then your dad told you stories about World War One. I'm so consumed lately with reading about James Reese Europe and what he was able to inspire in you. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Because I love that story.
Well, I heard about James Reese Europe and the music of World War One from my father.
Yeah.
My father was a cook with General Pershing's staff in World War One in France. And I guess the war was over in 1919, and the American troops came home. And he used to tell me little stories about the music he heard there from the black band from New York City, and I really didn't understand who he was talking about. And he spoke about the first jazz that he heard on the Mississippi River, and he heard the very first jazz that he heard coming from the New York band that was in France in World War One. Eventually, I found a recording that I believe it was a French record label had recorded of the 369th Hellfighters. Out of Harlem came a military band that a white colonel had put together. He wanted, and his words were, "I want the damn best military marching band there has ever been." And he went to Lieutenant James Reese Europe, who was a part of the Broadway team, the Castles. The Castles were this white couple of men who would dance on Broadway. People would purchase tickets to go and watch the Castles dance.
Mm-hmm.
It was Reese Europe who helped them to create the music and the dance. It was called the Foxtrot.
Yes.
So James Reese was very, very prominent in New York City in 1910. By the time the war started, they asked him to organize a marching band, and he went and got the clarinet players from Puerto Rico. And they went over to France in World War One. Eventually, General Pershing confiscated the 369th, and they became his personal military marching band.
Wow.
And to have seen these guys dancing, there is some footage of them dancing, and they were, you know, they were swing dancers. They were jazz dancers, the drum majors, the drummers. It went on and on, and there were even stories that Bo Jangles had danced in front of the 369th. And when you hear the music on this one recording, it is robust, it is crazy, it is wild. Like, the majority of it was always recorded in a field. They didn't go into a recording studio. Someone had the basic recordings, which began around 1917, and it was raw. It was just raw energy. And to hear that, And that set the East, once the war was over and the 369th returned to the U.S., they were booked for events all up and down the Eastern Seaboard.
Man.
Of states. And it became very, 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 very popular. Unfortunately, James Reese Europe had a very unfortunate death. He was stabbed,
yes,
in the neck. They thought it was a little prick, but he was actually bleeding to death internally.
Oh.
So that sort of brought the end of the 369th. It came to an end in a premature manner, but from the 369th, all of a sudden in the 1920s, there's that Harlem music, and the majority of the musicians came from Harlem. a number of the 369 returned to France and even into Germany, and they were the first jazz artists in Europe. That came to an end with the existence of the Nazi Party.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It was the beginning of the jazz era. Originally, there was Duke Ellington in New York. Jelly Roll Martin ended up in New York. In New York was this we had the Renaissance. What was it called? The Harlem Renaissance in the 1920s. Music was a major part of that event.
He was amazing, and even before he went to Paris, in 1910, I was reading that he at some point moved to D.C., he and his family, and he formed the Clef Club, which was a society for African Americans in the music industry. And in 2 years later, at Carnegie Hall, he was playing with his band for the benefit of the colored music settlement. That was way before anybody had, you know, some people take the credit for being the first African Americans or whatever, but James Reese Europe was instrumental. I mean, talk about a pioneer. And what he did when he left Europe, he just made those folks who heard that music crazy, and their life was forever changed, don't you think?
Well, he created a union, you know, like a workforce of African American musicians, and that was a first. And he developed a name in the tradition of the black music, and he made it socially possible that the elite white dancers, white music lovers, found it then acceptable to hire a black band. Not only were they working the black clubs in Harlem, they also got an opportunity to work they called it society bands and that was the elite rich world of the white race in New York City and Boston, all along the East Coast. He got the black musicians working. He got them working. He was an organizer, a union organizer, and he got the bands to play with class, to turn people on. He got the black music, the African American music was now in focus. Everybody began to learn about it.
It's a beautiful thing. Oh, my gosh. And I just read, actually, in the past 72 hours, because I was doing some research for when you came on the show with me, I saw that he was buried in Arlington National Cemetery. So I want to pay him a visit.
Yeah,
I
have
cool.
done that. I would certainly like to do that.
Yeah. He's a very strong character. And when you came on the show, Joe, you know, at the very onset, I was thinking about him because he was adamant about not doing anything else but the cultural significance of what was coming out of him. He didn't want in any way, shape, or form to fall prey to doing what other people told him to do musically. And in that regard, you and he are so much cut from the same cloth. You have always done what you thought was in your heart and your head, and you chafed at the notion of anybody telling you what to do, because what would be the point?
Well, the point is that the whole purpose of music to me, and it has always been since I was a kid, I could feel it, I could sense it, the purpose of music is to heal.
Yes.
That's why I sat at the piano all those hours. I got rid of my boredom. I got rid of whatever pain I was having. It wasn't easy growing up in the southern United States in segregation, and there was nothing going on outside your neighborhood, you know, or inside your neighborhood. I knew there was a lot of violent things that were going on, and I chose at home and practice the piano because I knew that the streets really had nothing to offer me except just learning how to grow up.
Yeah, well, you got really started early because I just loved. Was the Swingsters the name truly of your first musical group? I love that.
Yeah, and fortunately, you know, my parents, the love of music, the meaning of music to all of the elder African Americans I was around, coming from my immediate family to the neighborhood teachers that say in the kindergartens, in the Catholic school, into the public schools, into Texas Southern University, all of the African American elders reached out to help me. It was just only occasionally that I found that someone would reach out to hurt me. You know, an elder would but and then I began to understand that, man, it is really up to me. I know where I can get help, but I also realize that I've got to be careful because there are people who I think that would help me or would actually hurt me. So this really gave me a purpose. That happened when I was 15 years old. I got fired twice. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
Well, I watched this in my floors in a chain of restaurants here in Houston. I was in high school at 15 years old. I couldn't work long. Maybe I could work 3 weeks, and then I had to get back in my high school studies. So that was just one call. I got the restaurant chain was called One's a Meal. One is a meal. One's a meal. I got a call, and they would always call me, and they knew I was an excellent worker. I knew I was an excellent worker. So I went to this one place, and I saw, when I went in there, I saw this old black man from my neighborhood, and I thought to myself, oh, man, I know this guy. He don't like high yellow black people. This guy gonna give me trouble, which that existed in those days.
Yeah.
Dave, I went back. The boss man, a white guy, told me you're fired. So I asked the old black man, why did he fire me? And his answer was, I don't know. So now when I went back to Wheatley High School the next morning, everybody on the campus was laughing at me because I had gotten fired.
Oh, no.
Well, he had me fired. How did the whole school know to laugh at me when I showed up the next morning? The next time, a month later, I got hired at I was called to another One's a Meal. I went in there, and you had to get a time card and punch in, and I was supposed to punch in at 4. You know, the high school was out at 3. I made it across town on 2 buses, and then I would have on my work clothes by 7 minutes to 4. And this one evening, I sat out on a milk crate. I was waiting to punch in at 4. And suddenly, the door opened. The boss man came in, a white dude, and he looked at me and said, oh, see, that's what you're going to think? You're going to do with your lazy behind? You're fired. And I said, well, wait a minute, I haven't even punched in yet. I haven't started working yet. And the guy looked at me and said, well, you look lazy anyway. You are fired.
Oh, my God.
So I walked across the street and sat at a bus stop. Now, this was Lamar High School of Houston, Texas. At this time, this was the richest high school. This is where all the rich kids went to. And I sat at that bus stop, and I knew that I was in enemy territory.
Oh, boy.
The little white kids were coming by, calling me names and doing this. Eventually, the bus came. I transferred in the downtown area, and I went back to the Fifth Ward. And as I rode that bus back on the two buses back to my neighborhood, I vowed that I would never, ever again in my life ever have another boss man. I went home and got on that piano, which I was always on it anyway, but now I knew, come hell or high water, I didn't give a damn if I failed, if I wasn't a musician, if I couldn't play jazz, if I wasn't going to be good enough, I didn't give a damn. I was going to give it everything I had because I would never, ever again tolerate another boss man.
Wow.
That's the true story, and that's what
happened. Oh, my God. Fired twice. And did you ever find out what happened? How come your whole school were laughing at you? How come they all found out? Word traveled fast, huh?
I don't remember it now. It was obvious this guy had younger relatives, and he told them what had happened. I got him fired.
Mm.
And he started crying, which I didn't start crying. But the rumor spread like I was a chump. And it went all over the whole school. I said, man, everybody is making fun of me. And right away, the guy wasn't going to like me. You know why? Because I worked him. He looked at me as trouble.
Oh, boy. Mm,
He wasn't. He wasn't going to teach me anything about working hard. Man, working hard is something that is within you. He just didn't want me outshining him.
Gotcha.
He was mean. He was mean. I knew him from the neighborhood. This old guy was mean. And that's what. I never could look at that movie. I started looking at it, and I got up and walked out. The color purple.
Oh yeah.
I don't ever want to see nothing like that.
I understand. I do.
I never, ever look at it. It comes on now. I will change the channel. I don't want to see it.
Man, Joe, you really did live it. And as I recall, you know, in our past interview on Cool Jazz Conversations, I know that you went through some real emotional duress. How many times I've wondered, you know, in doing any kind of research and talking to people who were involved so heavily in jazz through the years, and you going through even that story you just told, just such class warfare, and that's within the African-American community and people looking over your shoulder, you looking over your shoulder, and then having to go out into the world, and we've talked about this, selling out venues for so many people, and then they couldn't use the water fountain, or they couldn't stay in the same hotel. You must have, at some point, reached out to God and said, when is this going to change? Are you going to give me the grace to get through? What do you ever want to write your memoirs and just get it all out on paper?
Well, I am in the process now, and it usually happens in flight, where I will pull out my biography, autobiography. I am at the age where the Crusaders have just left Texas and went out to Los Angeles, and now I'm talking about now when we began to get the first work in Los Angeles to survive.
Oh, yeah.
And we were, at one point, we were known as the Hollywood Nighthawks. And at the same time, I was getting other work with doo-wop artists like Bobby Day, rock and Robin, da da da.
Oh yeah.
Busy at one point, And then Johnny Guitar Watson. I was a part of the Johnny Guitar Watson band at the 5-4 Ballroom. It was at 54th Street in Figueroa. That was the dance club.
Wow.
For African Americans in Los Angeles. And I ended up there playing triplets high on the piano for doo-wop bands with Johnny Guitar Watson. Eventually, and you know, I'm right at that particular stage now. I'm going to go into our stint in Las Vegas that I knew that I had to do something about my life. I was not an entertainer from that sense to be a showman on a Las Vegas stage. We were there simply to earn a living. And we were with a vocal group called the Titans, and maybe we had a 3-year run with this vocal group being a very hot say ensemble in Southern California, and that was paying the bills. Eventually, in '61, we recorded the Freedom Sound. I'm just about to start talking about how all of that came about.
And my gosh.
Joe, you better hurry up. You may not make it.
No. Listen, you're taking really good care of yourself, I have to say. Joe, at the risk of embarrassing you, I'm just going to say this anyway. On my Facebook page, I put a pretty recent picture of you so that I could write a biography to whet people's appetite to tune in today. And either via private message or publicly, there have been a number of ladies who have commented, golly, he was always so handsome, and he's even more handsome now.
Well, I try to I don't want to get on a stage and look bad. And I remember once I was, and this was in the 60s, working, I don't know, it could have been Pittsburgh or Cleveland somewhere, and these black women came up to me and they said, Joe Sample, we are so happy that you keep your shoes shined. Because if you didn't keep your shoes shined, black women would talk about you like a dog. I'll forget that.
Oh, my gosh. Well, there you have it. Oh.
26 years old, and this group of black women made the comment that we're so happy you keep your shoes shine. Because if you didn't, we would never come back to see you anymore.
That was a lesson well learned. And
yeah.
I know that you travel a lot. So when you're out on the road, I mean, you've had a number of years to figure this out now, because there's not been a place where you haven't been. So how do you keep yourself in good shape? You must be eating right. Do you take food from home with you? What do you do?
I've always been active. I ran track. I ran hurdles in junior high and high school. I wasn't very good. I just did it because I love sports. When I got to Texas Southern, I had a major problem with Coach Ed Wright. He kept insisting that I play shortstop. And I told him, man, I'm not sticking my hand out trying to catch no hardball.
Oh yeah.
Guy put me on the bench for 3 years at Texas Southern University, this black university. He gave me D's and F's for 3 years in physical ed, because somebody would hit the ball, instead of trying to catch it, I would duck. You know, this coach became the head of the U.S. track and team field during the Mexico City Games when Ramos and the guys did the black fist.
Oh, wow.
That was Coach Ed Wright who was in. I just said, man, you think you know better than the Lord what I'm supposed to do with my life?
There you go.
I don't care who you are. I'll stand out here, and every time a ball comes, I'm getting out of the way. So this guy flunked me in physical ed for 3 years. The dean, the president, everybody at that university told me, you're going to have to obey this man. I said, uh-oh. No, 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 no.
Oh, no, no, no.
I ain't obeying this damn fool. I was a piano major.
That's right. That's right. That was crazy.
Bachelor of Arts of the piano. And it was like he knew my family. He didn't like my family. So, you know, some of that color purple madness.
Yeah.
Something about him he didn't like about my family. So he then and I don't think he liked musicians. He must have known I always thought that maybe my older brother was in bed with his woman or something.
Oh, well.
You know, I mean, it was just too much hostility.
He
just went after me, and he was going to destroy my life at the piano. He was determined, and I wouldn't let him.
Well, you know what, Joe? Honestly, this is the way I felt about you through the years, because you have such an elegance about you, and you were obviously raised right. And you know what? You know as well as I do, sometimes that ticks people off. And they like to make your life a living hell because you've got some kind of light on you and they don't have it. So instead of embracing it and respecting you because you got it, they're going to try to destroy it. And he sounds like one of those guys.
Well, people used to tell me in high school, in college, and wherever, you are aloof. Well, what the hell does that mean? I just always had something on my mind. I didn't have time to sit around and lollygag, because I always had a purpose in mind. I would break up. Once I got out to Los Angeles, I got away from Texas Southern University, and I got into Los Angeles, and we became established. From 1960 to almost a 10-year period,
mm-hmm.
I dedicated my life to working on the physical aspect of manipulating a piano. And I knew I had to do that because the first piano that I recorded on was the first Yamaha that came into the United States. It was a concert grand. It was so stiff, I could barely manipulate the piano. There was only one man who could manipulate that piano, and that was Clare Fisher. Clare Fisher was a bodybuilder.
Oh!
And the strength and the power to manipulate that piano. And I knew that's what it was going to take. I knew I was going to run into pianos like that all around the world for the rest of my life. So I broke my day into my practice day, which was usually daily if I could get to it. Half an hour working on this, half an hour on working on this, take a 15-minute break, a stress break. I had a regimen. And the weirdest thing is you never, ever see, it ain't like moving 100 pounds of brick from over there to over there. You don't never see it moving. It's just one day you notice, wow, I'm doing things that I couldn't do 2 years before. You never see it happening. That's why you just keep practicing and practicing and practicing, and all of a sudden I'm doing things that I could not previously do. And I used to work on my wrists. I used to work on the strength to push my fingers down, to pull my fingers up wasn't only the downstroke, it was the power that I had to move my finger, pick it up, and move it over to the next key.
Right.
So there were two motions. I figured all of this out. I'm not a virtuoso pianist. I was my nickname was Pee Wee. I was a weakling, 19-pound weakling. But I had all of this music in my heart that I could feel it burning, and I knew that when I touched the piano in a particular manner, I would feel this beautiful sense of healing. And in order to touch it like that, I had to have the strength. There are names that they call it: dexterity, flexibility. It goes on and on and on. All of the little muscular things that you need in order to play the way you want to play.
Right, right. There's a limberness. You strove for making yourself as limber as possible in order to get that sound the way you heard in your head and your soul. So that made perfect sense. Just in striving to create the sound that was always inside of you, you had to stretch, and you kept stretching.
Right. And then after almost 10 years of that, I would say roughly 10 years, probably from 59 to 69, because I was always practicing. After 10 years of that, when I turned 30 years old, I said, okay, that's enough. At this particular point, I am never going to be a classical pianist, not with the skills that those classical pianists in the Moscow conservatory had been taught with since the beginning at the age of six. It's almost like going to a military school of the piano teach them these incredible things. No, I did not grow up like that. I didn't want that kind of, I would love that technique, but that's not where I came from.
Yeah.
And it was something else. But I needed the technique to play what I wanted to play, and what I want to play is demanding. And even
I'll say
those classical pianists will look at me and say, you have a pretty unique technique to get the instrument to sound the way you want it to sound. There is one classical pianist that I've always admired, and Vladimir Horowitz.
Oh, yes.
And I describe his piano sound. His piano sound is very, very appealing to me. I described his piano sound, I don't know, 30, 40 years ago, as melting butter.
Oh.
That's
Ooh.
How beautiful. And this guy at one point decided he wasn't going to play any more of the concertos, because how in the world are you going to get 100 musicians to feel what you're feeling? So he felt like he was playing the concerto the way 100 musicians would play it. So it wasn't it. So he stopped doing that, and he started playing sonatas. And then he went back on the homecoming trip to Moscow, with the recording, with the video recording and all that, filming of it and all that, he was paid $6 million. And then what really got me was he had a crane on the top of his apartment building in New York, lowered his piano down to a flatbed truck. And they took it out to JFK and flew his piano to Moscow.
I heard that.
When I heard that, I said, uh-huh. You see, Everybody thinks that I'm crazy. I'm just supposed to sit on an old stupid piano and make it, what, critics come in and start, they don't even know what I'm playing. They don't even know what I'm touching. It's like trying to make love to a woman that you don't want to make love to.
I heard that, yep.
And so this guy flies his piano. So finally, a great pianist said, "Joe, you're perfectly right to feel that you need your instrument, my instrument, to do my best playing. I need something that's going to turn me on." And all the recordings I have done, I will go into a Steinway store in New York City or Los Angeles, and they may have 15 in there that they rent, and they all have numbers. And the classical guys will use this one if they want to play Bach. If they want to play Mozart, then they will rent that one. So all of these pianos are different. So fortunately, when I record, I go and locate a piano that I really like. Now, my favorite piano right now is about 50 yards from me in the piano room. The Steinway store is about 5 minutes from my house.
Beautiful.
They can come over here and set that piano up the way I want it to sound.
Yes. Yeah. Joe, I'm telling you, we need another hour or so just to hear your deep roots into music research and the stories and African American history. I want to do right by you and Randy Crawford, though. I want to make sure you tell us from the heart, because that's all you know to do, how much this live album means to you and this amazing partnership you've had with Randy through the years, because there's been so many albums, either with the Jazz Crusaders, your forays into different kinds of amalgams and all the people that you've played with. But Randy is so special.
Well, Randy is very difficult to deal with. You know, she is very difficult to deal with. I think now, after all of these years, I get the feeling sometimes she just has a strong opinion about she don't want a man telling her shit. She would raise a flare up at me, raise hell with me, but you know what? I just get right back in her face and shout her down. She knows that if I say I don't want this getting in the way of what we could do with so much more emotion and passion, we can do this with a trio. We don't need strings. We don't need horns. We don't need guitar players. At this point in our lives, I don't give a damn about no hit record. I don't know. I don't even think there's the mechanism out there anymore in radio to get a hit record in the kind of music that I'm going to make, or the kind of music that I would make with Randy Crawford. That's beside the point.
Right.
The point is, she's an American treasure.
Yes.
And I've had to beat her up to make her recognize that that's what I think about her.
I know, and this is the first live recording she's done. That's a trip. Woo!
I know. So, she's... And thank goodness it was Steve Gadd was there. And my son, who has been working with me for 10 years now.
Brilliant.
Understand that you work on a flow. You just, and Steve Gadd, sometimes Randy is at a whisper. So I have to touch the piano, and 15 seconds later she can open up with a roar. So and it's the key of it. This particular record is one of those rare experiences where you can hear and feel and recognize that everyone involved is feeling exactly the same thing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Once that happens, now you have just contributed to that that vault of classic music. It's classic, meaning any generation, 100, 200 years from now, will hear this and they will feel exactly the same thing that we felt at the moment it was being recorded.
That's right. That's right. Just beautiful to hear you talk about what has been so real for you through the years. I cannot believe, Joe, when I tell you, 48 minutes have transpired since we started this, if you can believe it.
Whoa.
Yeah. So that just goes to show you the wealth of passion inside of you, because it just, the history came out, the music industry came out, and I would be remiss if I didn't play a track. And honestly, I'm going to ask you this right now and put you a little bit on the spot. If you want to ever come back and share the musical history or where you are in your autobiography, please know that this show will always be a forum for you, because we just love you. I mean, I love you, and I speak for millions of people who do. I don't know what jazz would be without Joe Sample, honestly.
Well, and you know what? At this point in my life, I really look at myself as an African American folk musician.
Oh, okay.
Because I encompass it. It all comes out of me, from gospel to Creole folk music to classics. The blues, the honky-tonk music, the early rock and roll from New Orleans, the second line feeling. I'm not only a jazz artist. I am, like I've said, I was given these special gifts of being able to honestly to exhibit all of the ingredients of African American and American music, plus study classics on the side, plus have my imitations of the Caribbean, whatever.
And you're right. You know what? Let's pose it a different way. Where would anyone who considers himself or herself as an instrumental artist in the 21st century have been without the influence of you? Let's put it to you that way.
Yeah. I've been a lot of places. And
yes.
The reason you will not believe, I'm going to feature the Creole Joe Band in March at the Blue Note in New York.
Oh, wow.
You will hear me playing accordion for the first time.
Fabulous.
Creole folk music. When I first started this project, for, I don't know, 13, 14 years ago, I told everybody, look, I call this indigenous Creole folk music. You know, what are you talking about, man? Why don't you just call it Zydeco like everybody else is? Because it ain't Zydeco. Zydeco is a part of Creole folk music. There's a lot more to Creole folk music than Zydeco. So
that's true.
I'm playing. I had these melodies. I knew the thing. I knew I was going to have to play accordion if I wanted to make this music. Why did I do this? Because this is the first music that I heard when I was 6, 7 years old. Kifton Chenier was the first musician that I ever saw live.
Oh, wow.
He played a dance at my Catholic school. Twice at my Catholic church twice a month. That's the first live music I ever heard.
Oh,
it was called Exotico then. It was called Lala.
Lala.
Lala music, son. You and your brother and sister, you know, are you going to stay with your uncle? Your father and I are going to the la-la dance to hear the la-la band play the la-la music. That's what I was 1945, 46, 47. So guess what? I just left Japan. I picked that big thing up, and I swear, don't let me have a heart attack now, Lord. That thing is 50 pounds, and when I get it going, I can feel the energy just running through that venue.
Thank God.
It is physical. So, you know, I work out. I got to work out.
That's right. You do. You do. Especially now.
Well,
yep.
Blue Note, this will be my premier appearance in the United States sometime in March with the Creole Joe Band. Folk music.
Can we have you back then so we can blow this thing up and make people understand even more? Can we do that?
Yeah, sure. And so right prior to the gig, yeah.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I would love it. And I'll let you go, Mr. Joseph Leslie Sample. I appreciate your time more than you could possibly realize, and everybody in the chat room has appreciated it. And God bless you. We'll see you at Ram's Head this coming Friday.
Great. I'm looking forward to being there.
I am looking forward to having you pack the house and having people get healed, because that's what you do best.
Well, thank you very much. I'll see you soon.
All right, Joe. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We got to do this. We got to play one song before we get out of here, and we got to do Joe Sample and Randy Crawford from Live. This sums it up, No Regrets, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
No regrets, no, I will have no regrets. All the things that went wrong, for at last I have learned to be strong. No regrets, no, I will have no regrets, for the grief doesn't last, it is gone, I've forgotten the past, and the memories I have. I no longer desire both the good and the bad. I have flung in the fire, for I feel in my heart that the seed has been sown. It is something quite new, it's like nothing I've known. No, no. No regrets, no, I will have no regrets. All the things that went wrong, for at last I have learned to be strong. No, no, no. Regrets. No, I will have no regrets, for the seed that is new, it's alive. Thank you.
Unbelievable. Randy Crawford, Joe Sample from the live CD that just came out a couple of months ago. And, man, let me tell you something. Steve Gadd and Nicholas Sample really flesh out this album so well. It's just brilliant to be able to hear track after track, songs from the past that Joe and Randy have done anew in this live setting. Thank you so much to Joe Sample. Thank you so much to Stephanie from PRA Records. God bless you, girl. And we'll be talking to Joe, God willing, please, Lord, right before he does his grand debut in New York in March. Thank you so much to everybody who joined us today. It was really a special show, playing all this Joe Sample music, talking to a legend, and hearing about history. Man, there's nothing like it, honestly. We're going to hear from Claire Daly on Thursday. We're going to introduce you to a gal who just had the time of her life playing with the folks at the Kennedy Center over the weekend. Next Tuesday, it will be Lynn Bidmont and Russ Freeman from the Rippingtons. Yes, indeed. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good night. I know I will. Gonna have my little glass of wine and smile all night long. Bless your heart. This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. We'll see you Thursday.